episode number 173 with Steve and Mike. Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton.
This is his good friend, Mike Snyderman.
Michael Snyderman. How the hell are you, sir?
Steve, I only say good friend when I'm looking for a loan. No.
When you need me to back you in a tournament, but you keep all the winnings when you need that.
You know, I haven't gone back and listened to any of the earlier episodes, but I think there was the give and take between me and you, I think, was me with just withering mockery to you constantly about how dumb you were. And now it's like I'm coming, Steve, I need some advice, pal. It really has changed, Steve. You got, if this was like a relationship, you'd have the upper hand. You know what I mean?
Yes.
You've broken free.
I am.
I am Ike Turner and you are Tina, if you know what I'm saying.
Right on. Hey, speaking of, tooting my own horn here, I did a coaching session with Alex, and I messaged him, and he was like, oh, I can't take any new students right now. And I'm like, I'm not looking for a regular thing. I'm just looking for you to look over my database, you know, for an hour or so, if you can find a free hour. So we scheduled one, you know, 3 weeks out or whatever, and he took a look at it. And it was really good for my confidence. He looked over my numbers and he said, he's like, you're a full-time fireman, right? And I said, yeah. And he's like, these are numbers that I have my full-time pros are putting up. And I'm like, really? And he said, yeah. He's like, you're running 40% below expectation. So I should be at 8 big blinds per 100 and I'm only at 5. And that's after 65,000 hands. So that was informative to me about how much of a bitch variance can be, because I did the math on this, and it would be the equivalent of sitting down and playing live poker with a fast dealer that has a shuffling machine, and you would have to sit there and play for 90 days straight, never taking a piss break or going to sleep to get that many hands. And that's still 40% below expectation. That was eye-opening to me, that like how much luck is involved in this, you know? That was kind of a trip.
Well, for an internet player, 65,000 hands is just not an exceptional amount.
You know, no, I mean, like for a full-time, you know, real grinder, you can do that in a month and a half.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, but so that was pretty cool. That was pretty cool.
Did he see any leaks? Did anything jump out of your stats?
Not really, but there was one thing that he suggested, and it was upping my 3-bet amount. And I'm at 8%. So that surprised me a lot. I thought he would say I'm 3-betting too much, but he's like, no, in today's games, you need to be doing like 12 to 14%. And he's like, I'm at 16. I thought, wow. Okay. So his suggestion was, and one thing he looked over too, and he's like, you know, I haven't seen people, that are able to make a profit 3-betting with the suited aces and the offsuit aces. So that was interesting to me, and it made me pay attention after I played how I'm playing those hands, because I didn't know how to look through the database to find out if those are profitable or not. Every time I get one of those hands, I just got Mark in the background of my head saying, "You have an ace blocker, 3-bet it," you know, and that was about it. But I watched my game after that, and what I do is I'll 3-bet those hands against opponents that are opening too often, and most of the time they fold, and when they don't, if I hit an ace on the flop, I usually bet like a third pot and then I bomb the turn. And if they continue after that, then they got it. Or they have some type of draw that they just can't let go.
But, so did Assassinato say which hand does he like adding more like suited connectors to your 3-betting range? Did he specify?
Exactly. Yes, that's exactly what he said. He said you need to also be 3-betting the suited connectors and the suited one gappers. And he's like, you know, you get an active guy that opens, you know, early middle position, and you got king nine of clubs in the cutoff. He's like, you got to play ball, bro. He's like, you just got to 3-bet that. If you're not, then you're losing. And so he took all those hands and he figured out how many big blinds I'm making When I'm calling a three bet, I'm making half a big blind on average. When I'm opening any hand, I'm averaging one big blind. And when I three bet an opener, I'm averaging 2.5 big blinds.
Right.
So he's like, which one do you have to do more? I'm like, well, I got a three bet board. He's like, exactly. So it was interesting. He also did an experiment with one of his students, and his student was always opening 3X. And he said, you know what, for this next month, open to 3.1 and three bet to 3.1. And when he started opening to 3.1, he got three bet 20% less, just adding, you know, a fraction of a percent there, just a few more chips to make it 0.1, reduced getting three bet by 20%. So that had me sold. So from then on, I just started opening to 3.1.
It is not to Sassanata really does have such a fertile mind, because he really – I don't know if this guy's even a poker player anymore.
I think he's just – well, he does still play, but not very often.
Well, just coaching. His coaching is obviously first rate, although I think nothing lies about it, but he's talking about, you know, about being a true grinder all the time and, you know, all the – his caches, and I just don't know. I think that's part of the salesmanship. This isn't even a criticism, because I think his coaching is still, he's always thinking of something new. It's pretty fascinating, actually.
I couldn't write fast enough as he was talking. He was just throwing out golden nuggets every 45 seconds, you know what I mean? And it was like, this guy has probably forgotten more about poker than I'll ever know. It was very impressive. So, you know, if you guys want coaching from him, he's exceptionally good. He's not taking any students right now, but, you know, maybe keep bugging him and you can get in the schedule, because it was really eye-opening for me. So I'm three betting more now using those suited connectors. So I'm excited to do it live.
I usually don't like starting to talk about poker, and I want to talk about life first, but since you were on internet poker, Steve, I have something sort of big which has been going. I don't know if I've even brought it up yet. The problem I was having with Ignition Casino.
Yeah, they owe you like over $2,000, right?
Yeah, $2,100. And so finally I was, you know, I mean, I sent them all the information. I'm in the right. I stupidly tried to send the money from Ignition to ACR, which is dumb. I should always send it to a personal wallet, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But it was – so the transaction was denied by ACR. You know, it says $2,100, you know, pending. This is $2,100, rejected, whatever. I took a photograph of that, sent it to Ignition. No, we need the blockchain. And then for a while, they didn't even give me – I didn't honestly even have the wallet address. It's kind of – because if you go through your history and Ignition, it just shows withdraw. It doesn't say to – since it wasn't my own wallet. Finally, they said, okay, here's the wallet address. And I looked at it, and there was no transactions with it. I think I found it on the ACR side too, or somehow I was fucked up. And it took me a week or two to find it. So I – they said, look here, this is where you'll know that it was – and, you know, you can look it up and look at the blockchain history of wallet addresses. And there was nothing – no coins sent there.
Huh. Okay.
So I sent it there, and they said, okay, we have all the information. We're doing an investigation. You know, 1 week went by, 2 went by. Do you have any update? No. Finally, I decide to do – I think we discussed this once. Like, I was amazed where my brother had a mover who was fucking around with his furniture or something. He's like, sorry, buddy, I got to charge you. No, I can't have it there until next week. And, oh, by the way, I'm going to be charging you extra for – my brother says, you're stealing from me. I'll get on the internet today and spend 10 hours and destroy your business.
Yes, yeah.
You know, it works. If you – all you got to do is – he used the words social media savvy or internet savvy.
Yes.
So I finally said – I said, this is ridiculous. This has been 2 months now.
Yeah.
I hate to threaten – I said, but I've got a podcast with 1 million downloads. I don't know. I'll have to ask you if that's true, Steve. It's a lot, though, right?
We're up to a 250,000, I think.
Okay.
I'll have to check the numbers. But, yeah, it's pretty impressive for two kids from putting this together.
Simple country boys. Yes, Steve, I got you. But anyways, I threatened them, and I said, listen, I got a podcast. I said, I'll get on social media. I'll fucking destroy you guys. Give me my goddamn money, pretty much. You know, it was just straight up. I said, sorry you feel that way. We're still working on it. So I sent out a tweet yesterday or the day before. Ignition people, they're not giving me my money. People, stay away. There's I forget. And then like 5 minutes later, I forget. I remember I checked. It's not 5 minutes, like an hour later. But soon thereafter, I get an email saying from Ignition saying, we've resolved your –
That's awesome.
And I, I'm like writing back, well, thank you. But then I go, you know, like I go and check my balance and there's no money in there.
Oh.
And so I'm like, get back. I'm like, what do you mean resolve? I don't have the money yet. Well, we resolved it that the money was actually sent. So they resolved it against me. But they said the matter's done with.
What the fuck?
So they're like, and I swear to God, it's like somebody who, like, you know, I've probably been rude the whole time, Steve, you know, my communication problems. I don't know. But their thing explaining that it had been rejected was absolutely troll city. Because it was like, we suggest cutting and pasting next time, therefore errors won't be made.
What, like you were just typing it out by hand?
Yeah, and I'm like, is this the same person who's been communicating? Because no, I showed him the ACR little picture again. I sent that. I said, this is where I tried to send it. It was attempted and failed.
Yeah.
And they said, you really should check your – and then it was the thing was like, you really should also check your blockchain history. Like I forgot to do the most simple thing. And then I checked it and showed him that again. And I said, this is absurd. I don't know how much I've paid in rake. This is bad business. I've been – basically there's no other word to call this other than theft.
Yeah.
And I'd like a response. And my guess is I will not get a response at this point at all.
I have a phone number for them. If you want to,
well, I could try, but
I'd have to look it up. My phone's in the other room, but I have a phone number for them, and it dates all the way back to it dates all the way back to when it was Bovada, you know, and then it was what was it after I'm sorry, it was Bodog, then it was Bovada, and now it's Ignition. I think it's the same damn number.
Well, I don't know if it's – I mean, I'll try it, but I mean, yeah, someone else suggested the same thing. But this is – they did an official investigation. This is your investigation number. We've done it, and they've come up with their answer, which is, in my opinion, I don't know other way to look at it. I'm trying to think if somehow I could be wrong, but no, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Other than if someone on the ACR said, look, we're going to just – take the money and then write rejected on it, you know, blah, blah, blah. But no, I actually had the wallet address. It seems to, I don't know, Steve. So the funny thing is I'm talking last night at the table, with Alex about this, and he says, well, no, you can't give these people any more money in deposit.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I'm like, geez, you know, I mean, I might have my son for a few months. I need to play online poker. It's like, do I take this as a business expense and just assume, pretend in my mind that I lost 2,000 one weekend, which of course happens, you know, 20 times a year.
Yeah.
And redeposit because I'm giving away money by not playing on the site. I don't know how much I'm up on the site. Not a lot. It's got to be at least 40 or 50K though over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
So it feels just dirty. I'm not for the time being anyways. And by the way, you know, Steve, you asked the people out there to help with your – to, you know, help out by clicking the Amazon link, giving some money. If anybody wants to help me, angry tweets and emails at Ignition, please.
There you go. Throw it out there.
Saying I listen to a podcast. Now this is outrage. Anyone who's playing on the site, because it's the softest site, obviously I'm not going to expect you to stop playing on it because it's – and their service is probably good too. I don't know if anybody's really had a problem withdrawing. I've heard much, but for whatever reason, they've taking my money. Eventually, I might have to just, like I was talking to Alex, he's like, just take it as a business expense.
Yeah.
And assume you're not going to get reamed the next time it happens. But imagine if I did deposit and won a big tournament and then the money was gone again.
Oh, I would lose my shit. I can't imagine how you would feel.
A sane person would go crazy. How about someone who's already half crazy? So anyways, there's a decision to make there. But I mean, Ignition, if you're playing online, you know, Carlos was, you know, talking once. He's like, do you really not want to play this site? I was doing a hand history review. Somebody was doing something stupid. Yeah. I mean, you can't be playing – if there's no point in playing online poker unless you're playing that site if you're in the U.S.
It's just so much – incredibly soft, yeah.
Because you're talking about – it's funny. You're talking about your three betting more, and I was like thinking about – I'm like, well, then you got to start getting to the next level and wondering, you know, how you're going to respond to four bets if you're, you know, if you're playing the $100, $200 tournaments on ACR anyways. You got to start working on new ranges for that.
Yeah.
And then, but he's like, you know, like Ignition, Carlos said, there's no such thing as four bet bluffing here. Like it just doesn't exist. No, nobody has it in their game.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I think that's very accurate.
So this obviously
they four bet, but they've always got Jax plus. You know,
this has me in a rage. But anyways, if anybody, if any good Samaritan out there wants to join in my war of spite,
there we
that's
go.
A weird way to express it.
Facebook, Twitter.
I don't know. Make a difference. Yeah, just ignition. Like, you know. Sorry, Mike, you know, at Mike Snyderman, that Twitter, that Ignition, listen to your podcast. I don't know if it'll have any response for those guys or whatever. I doubt it. But
can't hurt.
I mean, I feel obligated to just not drop the ball without. But I can't let it control my life here. But anyways, you'll hear me. Hopefully I'm not going to sound like some, you know, crazy person still talking about how the commies are taking over or whatever, some obsession, but at least I'm not done speaking poorly of these people. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. 2 months is ridiculous.
Let's go about something more interesting, Steve. Vegas, baby.
Vegas. You just got back from Vegas. You're back in California now. And I just got here last night. how was your trip out here? You just came out and you played online only, right? Did you play any live tournaments or?
No, I played, three tournaments.
Okay.
One at the Venetian, one at the Wynn, and one at the WSOP.
Okay.
And I cashed the WSOP one.
Nice.
The Giant.
Oh.
You know, the one that's every Friday night and then at the end of the year.
Yeah.
This isn't a bad beat story. This is just that first day there I played the Venetian. It was a $600K guarantee with a $600 buy-in.
Okay.
And I might have a couple hands written down from that, actually. I can dig out. But I made it to, like, after dinner break. I think it was, like, 600, 1200 or something. And I got in, like, 20-something bigs with ace-king suited against ace-king suited. And lost runner-runner flush. So it's not runner-runner if you get it in pre. My buddy was getting angry when I told this story. But, I go back to the Rio, and I'm ready to go to bed. And I don't even know if I can return to Vegas this summer. But my buddy's like, just jump in the Giant.
And, yeah.
What a beautiful tournament that is. But
What's that one, 365 or 565?
Yeah, 365. Yeah.
365, okay.
So I jump into that, make the money deep.
Nice.
I forget how much I have in chips. I have like 300,000 chips plus.
Nice.
It might have been more than double the chip average at this point, or more than. And the one guy who has me covered at the table, again, I have more than the chip average, but I got like 25 bigs or something probably at the most. You know, mm-hmm. it's like a turbo, 20 minute levels.
Okay.
I mean, it is a turbo. I think day two they made it longer. They'll make it longer levels if you make it.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting, everybody who, even the people who get bagged, get paid that day. They do these kind of tournaments in L.A., these 2 days.
Everyone that bags get $1,500 or something like that. Yeah.
And then you have the pay jumps the next day. But anyways, I don't remember. There's probably how many people were entered the thing, but there's probably 100 people left and 30 or 40 bag. And anyways, me and this guy get it in. I have pocket tens and he has ace king off. And the flop is 10-6 deuce rainbow.
Nice.
And
oh, we can guess the river or the turning
this
river.
This is my bust out hand, Steve. There's only one way for me to lose it. Jack. And the funny
it's either
thing,
a queen or a jack, or a jack or queen.
Both of them. Yeah, you need both of them. So it's funny. Everyone at the table is like, "Oh!" Jumped out of their chair, looked at me, and I'm. You know, maybe I'm finally becoming a real pro. I'm numb to it. I know Carlos tweeted something, or you tweeted something about. I didn't about me getting knocked out of the online tournament.
Yeah.
I joked about slamming the computer shut.
I don't know what I cashed for.
Yeah, but Carlos was like, I just shut the computer. I mean, I like put my head in my hands for a second. I'm like, I was unhappy with a couple of hands I played late. But it wasn't even like, my God, I'm unlucky. It's like, oh, I had a chance, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That scenario where you were talking about the runner-runner, I've run that because about 10 years ago, I was on the bubble of a $40 ultimate bet tournament. I had been raising every single hand. Like, that was back when you could just completely just rape the bubble. And I was raising everything. And then I pick up aces. And I raised same sizing I did every single time. There's 31 players left, 30 pay. I'm second in chips. And the chip leader shoves on me. I snap call, flop a set of aces, and he needs runner-runner for a straight because he had 4 or 5.
And he got
it. he got the 2-3. I'm like, okay, the tournament shut down and that was it. I'm like, wow. I'm like, I got to run this. I got to know what the percentage is. It's about 3%. So
yeah, well, you can always, it's you had eight outs on the turn that you need to hit one, and then you'll have four in the river. So it's 8 times 4 divided by, you got 45 cards and then 44 cards. So 8 times 4, 32 divided by 1980. So whatever that would be.
Yeah, I don't remember. After I ran that, I was like, the runner like that was when you have a set, it was about 3%. So you're going to win that 97% of the time, but that 1 out of 33 or whatever. Yeah, that was brutal. But, oh, you know, I had an interesting conversation with Alex about, I've been practicing showing cards. And, you know, for the last decade, I've just never shown cards. I just, you know, don't give them any extra information. But what the only instances I'm showing cards is when, like, let's say I have pocket queens, I open, everyone folds. You're not really going to give much away, especially online, if you show that. But my reasoning is that every time they see you show a hand like that, or for example, if everyone folds to your big blind and you have kings, just show it. That'll reinforce them giving you a walk, you know? So over the course of a tournament, they may see you show 4 or 5 hands, and they see ace king, they see aces, they see queens, and they see, you know, that everyone folded your big blind and you had tens. I think that, like, subconsciously kind of influences them that when this guy raises, he's got a big hand. And I asked Alex about that. I'm like, am I giving away too much by doing this? He's all, no, that's exactly what I do. I'm like, okay, cool. So I'm going to start doing that live. I just got to make sure I don't give away any, you know, any body language tells. I got to make sure that, you know, if there's some real pros at the table, I probably won't do it. But
what does Assassinato feel about? You get caught on a bluff in the river, you bet big, someone calls, you know, you've got 6 high. Does he throw it in the muck or does he just show it? You know,
I didn't ask him about that specific scenario, but when I described what I did, he said that's exactly what he does. And then I also said, now let's say I have aces, I raise, the big blind calls, he checks, I see bet, he folds. I don't show at that point. Because I feel like at that point I might be giving away too much information with sizing or something, you know. But just something that they can't gain much information from. You open, everyone folds, you show your kings, you know. Or if you get a walk and you got a big hand in the big blind, just show it. And it'll reinforce that this guy is running hot or he has big hands, you know. But you never, ever show the bluff. At least I don't. And I didn't ask him about that. But
so you get, if you get caught in a bluff where you're never good, you just probably throw it in the muck?
Yeah, I just,
okay.
Yeah, I, you know, wait to see their hand, and then
I always
make sure that my pair of threes is actually not good. then I toss it.
I always show the bluff in the river. I think Brokos does the same thing. Remember, it's just like turn it over proudly, like, okay, yeah, you got me. It shows a certain confidence in your play. You know, okay. You don't care. You're bluffed, and you know. Yeah, I don't know. I guess we could talk about that, the merits of that. I would think if you're playing against like real good players, ever showing the bluff is probably – maybe you're better just showing it in the muck because the really good players are going to start breaking it down. And, okay, he played this preflop. How? You know, not just that the guy bluffs and puts you in a mental thing, but start – use that information to glean more information about your range.
I feel like I'd be wasting too much mental energy because when you show the bluff and now you're giving the impression that you're playing, you know – 7-5 of hearts on a queen high board with no pair. And I would rather just, because after you show the bluff, then people are more likely to get you to call. So you have to remember that people get up from the table and they come back.
Which isn't bad.
I guess. Yeah. But what if you never get a hand after that? You know what I mean? Now you're kind of forced to play these marginal hands and people are already more willing to call you down. And I feel like you're kind of dependent on catching cards after that. And if you don't, you might screw yourself. I could be wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. So what else is Steve? Anyways, Vegas. So I played those first two tournaments, day one. Busto, day two, I played a win $500 tournament, $550, 100K guarantee. That one I busted. I can't remember. Again, I think after dinner break, Maybe I have it written down somewhere. Nothing jumped out. I don't think I ever had like a real big stack. There's a reason that the win is Carlos's favorite spot.
Yeah.
Like we were talking, it might be a little more pro heavy. Last year they had like a lot of $400 and $600, 550s and 350s or 550s and 400s.
Yeah.
And this year they have mostly 550s and then $1,000 tournaments.
Yeah, they got some 1Ks in there, yeah.
So the smaller one buy-ins are gone, so it's going to be a few more pros hunting over there, but still it was like one of those limp.
Yeah.
I make it 8X, three of the four people call.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I still don't know if I know how to like play against these people. I guess it's just limp behind and get a hand. It seems like ISOing is there's this one guy who's like 80 years old. I must have ISO'd him 15 times.
Wow.
And ultimately, you know, he would just fold if he missed. So it was like perfect.
Perfect.
But I think
I love those fitter fold players.
Anyways, so and then the last day was the online event. But made the money in that. I forget. I went out like there was 3,000 something entries. I went out like in 100th place.
Okay.
And
what did you cash in that?
I think it was like $1,000. I lost money that Sunday because I fired three bullets into that, and I was firing pretty liberally into the two big tournaments on ACR, and I also busted $100K on. So for the trip, and I probably lost like $1,500, $2,000.
Okay, all right.
I don't know. I whenever you're running good, like if you're running really hot online, it's stupid to stop playing online and play cash, probably. You know, ride the streak out. You got to respect the variance part. We were talking about variance before. It's real.
Yeah.
And probably the same thing. I was run really good in cash. I don't know. The Vegas trip was kind of – it wasn't pointless. But, you know, I was in a real good spot in a couple bracelet events there. If I won that big hand on the giant, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, it's fun. I'm going to go play – I've got a – pretty loose schedule here. Each day that I've got written down here from now until the 28th, I've got anywhere from 2 to 3 tournaments on each day. I can kind of pick each one. You know, they're at different times depending on if I'm running late the night before. I may want to sleep in a little bit. But, today I'm going to go up and I'm going to play the Golden Nugget. They got a $200 quarter million guarantee. They had like 6 flights. I'm going to catch the second to the last flight at 3 p.m. And then tomorrow is day 2. They take the top 10% of the field today to go on to day 2. So we'll see how I do on that. And then I never thought I would say this, but I think I'm going to play a stud, 8 or better tournament.
Huh?
Yeah. I've been playing a little bit of stud online and, I won a horse tournament, not a big one. It was just a $10 buy-in. But, after that I was like, well, maybe I do kind of know how to play these games.
I'm guessing this is a small buy-in tournament, not a 1500.
Yeah, it was just like 10 bucks. But then I started playing. I'm like, okay, well, let me fart around with stud. Because when I was a kid, that was like one of the first forms of poker I learned was 5-card draw, 5-card stud, and 7-card stud. And so then I played a stud tournament. And out of 91, I got third last night. And then I played a Raz tournament and made a final table on that out of 100 people. And I'm like,
Jesus, Stevie,
okay.
What's going on here?
Maybe,
what one compliment from Assassinato and you think you're fucking Phil Ivey here.
That's it right there. Yeah, apparently now I'm just a fucking stud god. So I don't know. I it's not for another week. It's a week from today is the stud 8 tournament. It's
where?
Binion's 365.
Okay, well that's good. Although, you know, those old timers, that is their game probably.
That's kind of where I'm like, I wish they had like won the day before that was like $100 or something and I could go translate what I've learned online to live.
Well, it sounds like you've got some volume of hands you've played. It's not like, you know, me playing PLO and basically almost never playing it before and winning a tournament. So
that was so awesome, dude.
If I may inject myself into it, but it is germane to the conversation here. So
there is some stuff that translates over from Hold'em, you know, and I think the real advantage in stud, I've played some stud up in Reno, maybe, you know, when I drive up to my parents' house, I'll stop in Reno halfway and then spend a day there or something. And at the, Peppermill, they've got like 1-5 stud, you know, and like you said, it's just a bunch of old guys playing. But That I felt I learned from that is the advantage comes from remembering which cards are folded and recognizing which other players do not, you know, can't remember that or either choose not to. And, you know, so you can see that, you know, four spades were folded on in the initial betting round. And it really looks like this guy's drawing to a spade flush. But did he remember that four of them were folded? So now you can remove four of those cards from his range that he may not be able to do depending on what you got from your range. So that's the part that kind of interests me. Now, to be able to do that for an entire tournament, you know, and play 10 hours and then come back for day two and do it again, that's, I think, a lot more mental energy, at least for me, than Hold'em is. Hold'em's a lot easier.
Right.
But it is so fascinating.
What are the dates you're going to be out there again?
From today, we're recording this on the 9th. It'll come out on the 11th. And I'll be out here until the 28th. The 28th, I got to go home.
Do you have any bracelet events in your schedule?
Not yet. I want to, I wanted to play the Giant, but day two is after I leave. If I have to go home the 28th, if I don't, I have to look for another job.
Now I'm trying to, yeah, Steve, I might have to encourage, I think it's time, I think you got to take a shot at the maybe not the Millionaire Maker, the week after is the 1K Double Stack.
1K Double Stack.
So maybe
I have the schedule right here in front of me.
I'll give you $150. Maybe we got to get on Twitter here. And we got to. I'm sure we could get like $600 or $700 here. Take a shot at a bracelet event, man.
I need to. I really do. You said it's a 1K.
It's a 1K double stack with two starting days and limited entries. And
oh, here it is, June 16th.
Yeah, okay, there'll be. Yeah, that's a good tournament right there. I 10K, might be back.
60 minute. You know what? I think you're right.
I might be back to play that one. So that is, yeah, that's basically, I mean, that's similar probably to the structure of those daily deep stacks you like so much, Stevie, you know?
Yeah.
So there's some play in it. If I were to recommend you play one tournament, I mean, other than the 365 online would have been a good one for you too. Even late in this tournament, there were some freaking monkeys doing some pretty dumbass shit. But anyway, Steve, maybe get out on Twitter. Maybe get out and tweet on Tuesday when this is there, and you can I'll send you $150. That's about as much as I can.
Okay.
I can afford here, and see if we can whatever your price point is. If you can raise $500, you'll do it. If not, you won't. But
okay, yeah, let's do half of it. Okay, so I only need another $350. Anyone else that wants to throw it in there, no markup, and we'll ship a bracelet. Okay, so that'll be on June 16th. All right, so when this comes out, it'll come out on the 11th. You have 3 or 4 days to, one, two, three, four. I swear I can count. 4 days to contact me, and let's fucking do it.
Yeah, man.
All right.
Yeah, man, you got to fucking take your shots here.
Okay, all right. I'm going to do it. My plan was I'll wait and see how I do this first week, and you know, if I run deep in something, then I have more than the 54 that I came out with, and then I'll take some shots at some bracelets. But that one, you're right. I mean, it is a double stack. You start with 10K, and it's got 60 minute levels. That's just because some of these ones, you know, you start with 3,500, and it's like you double barrel on a bluff, and now you're down to like, God, I have 20 big blinds. I'm almost in push fold here.
Right.
You know? But with 10K and 60 minute levels, that gives you some time.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. You convinced me.
There we go.
Thank you, sir.
So what else do you, are you, how's your brother's new place?
Good. I'm staying in his bedroom right now. He's on his honeymoon, actually. He's coming back tonight. Him and his wife went to Italy, and so they've been sending us pictures and everything, and I think he's ready to come home, though. He was supposed to be here last night, but there were air traffic controllers in Italy were on strike or something, so his plane got delayed, but he's probably right over the Atlantic Ocean now, here somewhere, okay, and he'll get in tonight. But yeah, so that'll be good to see him. I'll be staying with him for the 3 weeks unless something opens up at Alex and Mike's house. I talked to Mike and Alex, and they're like, you know, someone always leaves for 3 or 4 days to go home because they're just freaking over it and they need a break. Right. It's like, okay, well, when that happens, let me know. You know, I don't want to sleep on the couch, especially when I have a nice queen size bed here. You know, so, but if a room opens up, I'd love to be in that poker environment for
sure.
3 or 4 days or however long I can. You know, because the information you get and the stuff you learn just being in an environment surrounded by pros is really awesome. You know, and I think it's it's something I want to experience again today and or this trip, and hopefully I will.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I still haven't figured if I'm going the one little stretch I definitely could come back would be that double stack weekend.
Yeah.
Well, I shouldn't say definitely. I feel this is kind of there's a camping trip for my son that weekend.
Okay.
Which I absolutely despise.
Yeah.
But he's doing a lot of cool stuff this summer. He's going to do several summer camps. Then I'm flying to Maine probably for a whole month. He's going to do camp up there, hang out with us. So I feel like he's having a full – he would really love to do the camping trip with the Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
But I might be like, Jonah, listen, I can't I need to play some poker this weekend, you know?
Yeah.
So I might come out that like Saturday morning and leave on like Tuesday or Wednesday. So be out there for 4 or 5 days and
do it, bro. If you don't have a place to stay, I can ask my brother. I'm sure it'll be fine. He's got a spare bedroom here.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so, that works.
We'll be about 15 minutes from the strip, something like that, maybe 20.
Okay. Is there a lock on the inside of the door? I don't know what the Barton boys might be, you know, sleepwalkers with, you know.
I'm looking at it right now. There is a lock, but I can disable it.
Climb into my room. Okay.
Yeah.
Just making sure, Steve.
2 o'clock in the morning, you get a creepy guy looking over you.
I'm so paranoid about everything, pretty much.
Oh, man. That'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I'm glad we recorded here, Mike. You convinced me to play a bracelet event. That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
And probably one of the best ones too.
Yeah, I think it's a good call. I mean, I personally would probably that would might be number one. Although, I mean, you're there for the Millionaire Maker, Steve. That's a pretty damn good one too.
I just texted KB Killingbird, and he texted me back a picture of the stack, and he saw him in the millie. I'm like, well, good luck. So,
does the TPE boys, do they have their meetup date set yet?
I believe it's June 22nd. So pay attention to my Twitter at HUP podcast, and I'll throw it out and retweet and all that once I know for sure. But stay tuned for the following week. That episode will come out on the 18th, and then I'll know for sure then. And and we'll meet up. It'll be at PT's pub off of Decatur and what street is it? Flamingo?
That sounds right, but I can't remember.
Okay, yeah. PT's pub, where it always is. Get a bunch of pizza and beer and good times had by all.
Should we do a couple hands, Steve?
Do you have some? I've got two from ACR. They're okay. They're kind of quick.
I got a couple hands here. I'm actually curious. I actually kind of want to talk hands here today or get the response.
No shit. Okay. All right, let's do it.
Well,
piece of paper here.
That'll end about 9 seconds into it, but we'll see it for the moment. The online bracelet event.
Okay.
We're getting fairly deep here.
And buy-in?
We're in the money. $365 buy-in. There's like 130 left. Okay. And I have a top 20 stack.
Nice.
I believe it's at 5,000, 10,000. No, I think it's at 6,000, 12,000 right now.
6, 12K. Okay.
And I start the hand with about 460K in chips. I think want to say average is like 300 or something. So I've got, you know, pretty like a well over average here. You know, typical
almost 40 big blinds.
Typical tournament, you know, getting late, average chip stack under 30 bigs kind of thing.
Oh, wait, no, you have more than 40 big blinds.
Just about 40, just under 40 if it was 6K, 12K. Okay. I mean, I didn't. Don't have the hand history, but I wrote a couple down, and I think it's pretty accurate.
Okay.
There's only one person at the table who has me covered in this hand, and he raises under the gun. I think it was like a min click. He makes it 24,000.
Okay.
He's got about a million in chips. He's one of the top couple stacks. He's maybe the chip leader.
Okay.
UTG 2 shoves for $120,000.
Okay, so 10 bigs.
Yes.
All right.
And then it gets over to me in the cutoff, I believe.
Okay.
And I have ace king off.
Okay. How often was UTG, was the big stack opening?
A fair amount. I was HUDless, so I can't remember.
Yeah. But he was active. He wasn't just playing tight and happened to be catching hands and people were paying off.
Yeah, he was. I think his under the gun range, opening range is pretty strong.
Okay, pretty strong.
Let's give him the sake of let's say he's a competent player. I mean, that's normally the standard thing is you should, regardless of how aggressive you are, you really can't expand your opening range that much, even when you're pushing. It's like middle, late range. Then you can start opening any two cards and just raping the blinds. But
yeah,
full ring, you really shouldn't expand your UTG, UTG1 opening range too much. I personally don't think so.
Yeah.
But I think most pros would agree with that. There's just too many players to get through.
I agree.
And it's not the bubble. So let's just assume he's opening your standard 15%.
Okay. You're in the cutoff. Do you remember what the stacks were behind you, the button, small blind, big blind?
I don't.
Okay.
This is the only guy at the table has me covered. That's that much I remember.
That much you know. Okay. This is an interesting spot because you got a guy opening under the gun. We got to assume he's doing that with probably 15% of hands. Then you got a guy that shoves, knowing that that guy's only opening 15% for 10 bigs. And then now we're in the cutoff with ace king off. I feel like if it was ace king suited, I might be more inclined to call and then see what the under the gun does. And maybe see a flop. But I mean, at that point, you're only going to have 30 bigs behind. There's going to be 30 in the middle. Kind of got to go with it. 40 bigs is a lot to shove with ace king. Since it's offsuit, though, I'd probably do it. I think I'm probably just shoving here. I don't like it, but I think it's... If you click it again and make it 20 bigs, then you got 20 behind, you got to go with anything. If you call... Anyway.
Can you call and fold to a shove? You would be putting in just over a quarter of your stack.
See, I feel like he could be doing that though. With would he reship there with ace queen?
No, probably, but he might do it with queens.
Yeah,
where you're now making a horrible, mathematically speaking, fold.
Yeah.
So, and if he's got any, if your plan is to fold to a call and he has any bluffs in his range at all, or semi bluffs, if he's reshoving pocket eights and stuff, and you're folding, then it's a disastrous play. If you think you're getting perfect information, if it's queens plus, even though, you know, you block aces and kings, if it's if it's one of those 12 combinations of hands, you know, half of them you absolutely dominate, that absolutely dominate you, then maybe you can fold. I thought it was an interesting spot. I think I kind of like a fold here.
I was about to say. I think this may be actually a fold.
I'm not really the original guy. Of course, there's the risk of getting knocked out. And the other guy reshipping. I think he's got a pretty tight range. Eights or nines plus. Let's just throw ace queen suited in there. So against that range, if we knew the original guy was folding, it would be a shove because, you know, with that dead money in there.
Yeah.
With the blinds and this, we probably only need 40% or less, so it's not – I think you can make an argument for a fold there.
I'm plugging ranges in here as we're talking now, and I got 12% for the opener. I got sixes plus, broadways, and then I threw in a jack 10 suited. And then for the reshipper, for the guy with 10 bigs, I got sevens plus – ace jack suited plus ace queen off, and then king queen suited, which I think that's probably about right, right?
I think ace, jack off, and king, queen suited might find their way into the muck, but you never know. So using those ranges?
Using those ranges against ace, king off, we are 33%. Player two is 37. Player one is 28.
Well, like I said, the most likely scenario is the original raiser folding. He's got to fold. Like, he's probably should be folding queens there.
He's got twice the chips you do. I don't know about that.
He's only got two big blinds.
Kings. He's never folding aces.
I think he's supposed to fold queens there, but he's only got two big blinds in the pot, and now he has to put half his chips in.
True.
I mean, my range is so incredibly strong. This is the bottom of my range.
I think ace king off is the bottom of your range. Yeah.
So and if he's got queens, I don't know what he's doing with queens there. He probably calls, like you said, but he's folding.
I think
flatting and then folding to a reshove might be the worst, but I think I kind of like folding a little more than reshipping here. But I don't know. I reship the original raiser folds, and the villain has aces, and I lose.
Okay.
So not a massive amount of chips. I lose, 10 bigs, but it takes me down. So I'm down to 330K or something. And then the very next hand, it folds to me, and I have pocket 10s.
330K, 10, 10. So you're in the hijack this time?
Yes.
Okay.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Hijack. 10, 10, 330K at 12. So you have a little less than 30 bigs. You got like 28 or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Does it fold to you?
Yeah.
Okay. What was your normal sizing opening? Just clicking it?
No, always, I'm always doing like 2.1 to 2.3, putting like the randomness number in. I probably should, but I make it, 27,500 around there.
27,500. Okay. And what happens behind you?
Folds to the big blind, who is the, chip leader.
Oh, okay.
And he calls.
Okay. 27,500. All right. Okay.
The flop is 9-8 deuce.
Great. I was hoping it was going to be ace, king, jack or something. okay. What do we have in the pot at this point?
I don't know. Let's see. The small blind, 6,000. And then so 55, 61. The probably let's just say it's a 1,200 ante. Another – Let's just call it 10,000. So 71K. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right. Yeah, there's 55 from the raises and then with the blinds and annies. Okay. All right. 71K about. 9-8 deuce. And the big blind?
Checks.
Of course. I don't see any. I've been experimenting with this. And I've been doing like the overbet, betting a lot bigger and then like doing an overbet on the turn. I don't know that this is a great spot for it though, because I don't know that you have enough chips. I'm certainly putting in a C bet here though, I think. We have position, we've got an overpair. I think he probably would have re-raised with jacks plus. So I think we're going to bet for value here. Try to get something from, king, queen, or what else are we targeting? I guess we're targeting like a ace, nine, ace, eight, any
pair he's probably calling. Any pair, any gutter ball he's probably calling with, maybe some ace highs.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's a must value bet. Yeah. There's so much worse that he can call with.
I don't know. A little more than half pot, something like that.
I go a little less. I bet 31,300 or so.
Okay.
31. And he calls pretty quickly.
Okay, 31K, that's another 62. So we got 333 in the middle.
333. Okay. No, we got 70.
Oh, I'm sorry, 133.
Yeah. We got 72 plus, yeah, 60. 62. 170, yeah, okay.
133,
100,
about.
133, 134, 135, somewhere in that range. The turn is a three of hearts, so that's about as good as it gets. 9-8, 3 deuce.
Yep.
No flush draw out there.
Nothing out there. Okay, so it's rainbow. We don't have to worry
checks,
about any of that.
Checks to me.
Yeah, I don't see any reason not to fire again. What do we have left in our stack here? We started with 330. Then we bet 27. And then we bet 31.
Changed. But maybe it took 59K off our stack. So, yeah, but 271K or something probably. I don't know.
Okay, 133 in the middle. We got 271 behind. If we get a safe card on the river, and by safe I mean like another three or something, do we want to try to go all in here? You know what I mean? Like I'm trying to plan our sizing here for possibly a river shove, or are we just trying to like squeak value out?
I think if I, yeah, I mean, are we trying to size it for a river shove is what you're asking?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, any decent sized bet is pretty much going to be kind of sizing it for a river shove. Even if we bet 60K here, then there's 250 something K in the pot. And
we'll have 210 or something behind.
Yeah. So pretty much any bet here is a, can set up the river shove.
Yeah.
Yeah, I might. I mean, there is. We can't dismiss the possibility if we bet and he calls here that he's slow playing a set, though, right?
Or 8-9.
Right. I would be tempted to check back most rivers to not be put to the test, I would think.
If he calls this, yeah, I think I'm checking just about every river. Yeah. Except a 10. 10, let's see. Well, yeah, I would still value bet a 10 because. What's he doing there? Calling with Queen Jack the whole time, or
well, 6-7.
6-7 would be the only one that you got to worry about, I think. And he's not calling that. I don't think. I don't think he's calling your raise with 6-7 off in the big blind, but probably 6-7 suited. So he's only got four combos of that. Yeah, value bet 60 to 70K, something like that.
I check back.
Really? And what was your reasoning there?
I don't. I guess give him an opportunity to maybe to. I didn't necessarily think this was a three street hand. I didn't think he'd call off bet shove with 8x or 9x. I could be wrong though. Also a little. I didn't want to be put to the decision. I guess you know it's also late and. I was happy controlling the size of the pot here.
See, I'd rather bet the turn while we're pretty certain that we've got the best hand. And then check back the river, then I would check here, give him a free card if he's floating with ace king or something. I don't know. You know what I mean?
I thought, yeah, I thought, you know, disguise the strength of my hand a little bit and craze, you know, like I said, there was a lot of rivers. I might bomb the river.
Okay.
Yeah, I've asked quite a few people about this hand, and most of them have said, why are you not betting the turn?
Yeah, it's such a sweet card. That three just changes nothing, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. And then this would be an assassinato expression, that, you know, buying showdown. This also keeps you from being in tough spots in the river a lot of times.
Yeah.
So I decide to check back. And okay. The river is a king of clubs.
All right. And villain?
Final board. King 9-8-3 deuce, no flush, no straight out there. The villain checks.
Okay, I'm definitely value betting this, and I'm going to make it small. I think we're value targeting here a 9 and 8. Any busted draws folding anyways, and we win anyways. Yeah, so I think we're targeting a 9 or an 8, something like 9-7, 8-7. 10-9. Well, we blocked the shit out of that. But Jack 9 suited, Queen 9 suited, stuff like that. Ace 9.
When he checks the river, I think he might have tried to bluff 10 Jack, 10 Queen, some missed gutter balls.
Yeah.
Maybe some ace highs. So when he checks to us, I think he's got some value quite a bit, and we have to value bet thin.
Yeah, I think so too. Into 133, I'm probably doing like 44, you know, just trying to get, you know, like four more big blinds out of him, you know.
I like that sizing. I decide to make it 57K after he checks.
Okay.
A little more ambitious, but still, under half pot.
Yeah.
And villain takes quite a while and then shoves.
Oh.
That was my expression. Although it was a howl of pain.
That's nasty. Huh.
So villain, I don't have all the math in front of me. I guess if we want to do the math here, to start the hand on the river, what do we say? I had probably about 265, 270K. So
we'll call it 270. Yeah.
Okay. So that's 540K. It's about 680K pot altogether if I win it, and I have to put in about 215K. So I remember looking, and he needed, if he's bluffing 30% of the time, it's a break even chip EV call.
Correct.
Is he bluffing here ever?
30% of the time.
It seems pretty obvious. This is a spot, first of all, I guess, where I can level myself, because I have a bluffing range here.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people do. I think even aggressive players aren't check shoving here that often, even when they've got the guy ranged and they're like, okay, this guy has one pair. I mean, I would check back some sets too on that flop pocket nine sometime. I'm not necessarily. So that doesn't, when I check back turn, it doesn't necessarily mean I have just one pair, but usually that's what it is.
Okay. Okay.
Now, if you're this guy and you had king nine and just hit two pair, would you be checking the river? Or would you be leading out for some small value and hoping the other guy had something?
Let's see. What would I do? Okay, let me put myself in his shoes here. All right. I'm in the big blind. You raise. I defend with king nine, which I would do. Flop top pair. Actually, I'd probably lead out with king nine, and I would do also do it with like my ace deuce and stuff to kind of balance that out. So I don't think I would have played king nine like he did. I probably would have let it.
That would be terrible.
Really? Why?
Well, what do you do if you get raised?
Then you fold.
Okay. But you're given an opportunity to raise with like gutter balls there. A lot of 10 jack. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff.
Okay.
Or queen 10. Even seven jack suited if for some reason I was opening there. So I think you're folding. You'd be in a position where you gotta.
I'm folding too much?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, depends. Okay. I think that would be like the like kind of hand that I would never do that with. But you never know.
Okay.
I'd have to think about it some more. But basically, I took my entire time bank, and my thinking was, that this guy's a lot of chips and he's got some bluffs in his range. And like, I was just thinking, if he's got two pair or better, wouldn't he lead that river? It was one of those things that there were so many chips in the pot. If I folded though, I still had almost 20 bigs. So it's not like I would have been in desperation mode if I fold. I mean, I was like, really? It was like literally, okay, I got to fold. I got to fold. I mean, this is a clear fold, da 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 da. And
that he took, though, is what's kind of throwing me off. You know, like if he just quickly reshipped, I'd be a lot more likely to fold. But right. Since he took a while, I'm like, maybe this is a call.
Well, that was like, yeah, because I was like, call, buddy, call, because I thought he was mulling a call. And then he shoved. Yeah. It didn't even occur to me that that was part of the.
Yeah.
So,
God, like I could see myself doing either way. If he's only going to be bluffing 30% of the time, I could really go either way on this. I could either call or fold. I don't know. I'm not sure which one is correct. I think they're both so close.
Well, the river, I was so sure that I probably had the best hand when he didn't lead out. It was It was like I didn't even say to myself, "Well, this is an obvious bet fold." I was just trying to get. But when you're betting thing for value, it's like always, I should have been right away. Okay, this is a bet fold. And if this guy, basically, if this is the guy, if I'm playing against myself, if I'm playing against the 3% of players that actually have check shoving for so many chips, you know, on the line in a big spot, then I got to tip my hat to the guy. But I called and he had king deuce.
Oh, wow.
Knocked me out of the tournament. So
was it at least suited?
I don't remember. No, I don't think so. I mean, it's pretty standard. The big blind defend these days are very, you know, very high.
I think King Deuce off there. You open from the hijack?
Well,
he has the big stack. I mean, I'd defend with King Deuce suited, but offsuit I would fold.
Right, but of course the story of this hand is, you know,
yeah,
not about criticizing the opponent for how he played, because he played it pretty damn well. Obviously, like I said, amazing. I've been doing that more, especially in cash games, checking the nuts on the river.
Okay.
And shoving, because if you range the guy as being kind of strong, because if you have him as an overpair for some reason, you got your set or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously the guy outplayed me. I really thought he would bet that for value, and I thought he was just a smart player, was going in the tank. First of all, his name was Gunslinger.
Okay.
And he had all the chips.
Yeah.
So I mean, like those factors, I'm like, am I really gonna fold to Gunslinger? Carlos was sitting there sweating me, and for the record, he said he would have bet the turn and then check back the river. But, you know, as I played with checking back the turn, he said when he bets the river, he's probably going to call.
Yeah.
Because it looks like you've just set up yourself to be bluffed here. When you're pot controlling one pair and betting small, it looks like a thin, you know.
I think that's the lesson on this hand is bet the turn. Get your two streets early instead of giving him a free card on the river.
Well, yeah, and I think just don't call your chips off with second pair in a bracelet event with a soft feel. Is it sort of?
Yeah, but I would be curious how the hand would play out if you bet the turn there. He'd probably just fold, I would think.
It's just, you know, we focus on these big hands. I mean, it's just if you had on your computer, you know, in front of you written in big letters, they always have it. You know, the one expression people are always using, it's probably you wouldn't be doing any detriment to your game. It's difficult on which side, whatever, but it's just even really, really good players, I don't know if we're bluffing 30% of the time. And if you go by the tendencies of an overall player pool, it's for that many chips in this spot, it's like under 5%, Steve. So it's an easy fold, I think. Maybe not easy. I don't know. You know, I don't know.
I don't know, man. I mean, in the moment before you told me the results, I was like, I could go either way. The thing that threw me off was his timing, you know, taking his time like that. I was like, that was a good move on his part.
Carlos thought it was a real tough, close spot too. The more I've thought about it, the one of the friends I ask here, who's a real attorney whiz and won a bunch of shit on PokerStars, he says the river's an easy fold.
Huh. Okay.
He's just said it, and if it's a guy if it's one of those guys that's capable of bluffing there, you tip your hat to him.
Yeah. Okay.
Then he also liked the check back. If you're not going to bet the turn, checking back river too. But
okay.
I don't know, man. That was frustrating. I was kind of numb. I'm like, Jesus, this was all set up. Like I said, two hands earlier, I had a top 20 stack, and then boom, boom, gone.
Huh. Man. Damn. Damn. Well, do you have any others?
I got a cash game hand from last night. I thought it was kind of interesting.
Okay.
Interesting.
You know, before you bring it up, Mike, let's take a quick break and we'll hear from one of our sponsors and then we'll come back. What's your warm-up routine before you play cards? I'll tell you what mine is. I gotta have me some Elliott Rowe. Yes, I will not play a hand of poker unless I listen to that man's voice first. Hypnosis and meditation tapes just before you play so you can focus completely. Listen to an MP3 before you play. You can put it on your phone, your computer, your tablet. He's got them for everything. Relaxing the poker mind. Hypnosis for Life Value Pack. Maybe you need to be playing a little more and the simple volume system is for you. You can try it for free at 7-Minute Tilt Buster. The links are in the show notes or at headsuppoker.poker. This is the next step in poker. The Mindset Advantage by Elliott Rowe. Use the code HUPOKER and score yourself a discount. Elliott Rowe. Okay, so this was a cash hand?
This is a cash game. Hand from last night.
Okay.
Specifically, also bring up, we always talk about how important, you know, bankroll management and game selection is. And I probably should have I was playing 2-5 in a great game, and I jumped to 5-5 when they called the game because there was a couple great players. This 5-5 was pretty special too. But since I got back in town, my very first day, I lost $3,300. And I've had like four $200 to $300 winning sessions, but I probably should step back and play 2-5 for a little bit, you know. But anyways, playing 5-5. I've got probably 2,000 in front of me. I don't know. It's a straddled game.
So 5-5-10?
Yep. Okay. I'm in the straddle. Sorry. And Alex is actually at the table. I haven't seen a lot of him recently, but he was playing.
Okay.
And Alex opened, I think it was the hijack to 40.
Okay. Hijack to 40. Okay.
The button, the small blind, and the big blind all call.
Oh, wow. Okay. Button, small blind, big blind, 40, 40, 40. And Mikey has?
I have ace three of spades.
Ace three of spades. Okay. And we flick in a call.
Yep. Okay. Not a terrible squeeze hand, though, would it be? Make it 280 or something?
Let's see. Yeah, you know what? Actually, these are kind of the three bet spots that that I'm looking at, you know, that I'm profitable at. But the position's wrong. I would probably do it if, like, Alex opened the hijack, the button or the cutoff called, and then you're on the button. But out of position here, I like a call.
I think it only actually also looks stronger maybe out of position. I mean, I guess it's
standard. It does, yeah.
I think it doesn't for the other. Alex is capable of clicking it back with four betting here. He's been playing really aggressive more than so I think calling's the best option.
I think so. I mean, you only got to flick in 30 when the pot's, you know, almost, what is it, 170?
Yeah.
And you've got a suited hand. It flops well. Easy to play.
Okay. So there's 200 in the pot.
Okay.
Five ways. The flop is jack, five, deuce, rainbow with one spade.
Deuce, one spade. Do you remember which one was the spade?
I don't.
Okay, about one spade. All right. And small blind?
Check, check, check. Alex makes it 125.
And you check?
Yep.
Is there any value in leading here? I don't think so, not with this many people. Okay, all right, so we check. Alex makes it 125 into 200?
Yep.
Course, and what does everyone else do?
The button calls, and the small blind folds, and the big blind calls too.
Wow!
So now we got 575 in the pot, and we have a gut shot.
And hero, we got a gut shot and a backdoor nut flush draw. What'd you say was in the pot? 575.
I believe so.
That'd be, yeah, 3 plus 200. Yeah, 575. Okay. Boy, and we got 2K behind. I'm sure Alex has this covered, right?
Yeah, I think so. The guy to my right is really, really bad. I don't even know if lunatic, though. You say usually lunatic if someone's, yeah, just weird, shoving in weird spots and calling in weird spots and doing so. I mean, basically, though, any way you analyze this four way, I'm going to have to hit to win the hand.
Yes.
I mean, if I want to do some bold, you know, yeah, I mean, it's I ain't putting any more chips in the pot probably after this. But it is worth noting that the guy on my right, like if I bet big on the river or if I hit on the turn and were to bet big here, lead for pot, like Alex, first of all, who probably has the strongest range when he c-bets, he's probably queens plus here a lot of times.
Queens plus, ace jack.
He will fold there. So that's the other thing. If I hit the miracle card, there's one player there who's definitely not paying.
You're
me
not
off.
Getting that action from.
But okay. The other guy, but the fact that there's this guy on my right, like he's capable of like calling off his chips with. He didn't have as much as I would have been much happier if he had 2,000. I think it's an easier call. I want to say he had, just like 700 to start the hand or something.
Oh, okay.
But I thought I could call here for the back door, but also I thought there's a decent chance I get to see two more cards.
Okay.
Because the turn card, I think this is kind of, at least I like this sort of thinking on my side. Like I said, the turn, the small blind, the big blind is going to be checking a lot. Then, you know, I check behind if I miss. And then, like I said, Alex would checks anything less than two pair. And the button, I think, plays fairly straight up. If he doesn't have a monster hand, he doesn't bet the turn either. This is what I was thinking.
Okay.
So I call, and the turn is the Ten of Clubs.
Ten of Clubs. All right. So we're theoretically done with our hand unless we get checked through.
Yeah, someone could definitely have two pair here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so big blind, he
checks around. It checks around.
Oh, it checks through. Okay.
Yeah.
So we got 700 in the pot going to the river. Alex, so really you think Alex is checking? Well, I guess with the 10, if I had queens there.
I would be checking just about everything there, I think.
Not checking sets.
No, yeah. I'm not sure. He might have just had ace-king and just taken a shot and had nothing. But I wouldn't be surprised if he checked back an overpair here.
Okay.
Because jack-10 is definitely in the range of the button. It's a tough spot if you get raised. I guess it's not a tough spot if we think that the button is pretty face-up. Actually, he hasn't been. He's 3-bet fold a few times. I'm not going to make any – but if it checks around, I'm assuming – is everybody capped? Does anybody ever have a set there? Or is it always one pair max? Does anyone have two pair or better?
If anyone's got a set, I would think it would be the big blind. Just because it got bet on the flop. So let's say he's got a set here. He's probably anticipating that someone's going to bet the turn. And maybe he can re-raise it. He's only got 700, so that'd be a good...
Yeah, neither button. Alex or the button have a set here. I don't think ever.
I don't think so either, no. I can't see how after that turn they're going to... they're not going to bet a set there. I think that would be a big, big mistake.
Yeah. The river is the Four of Hearts.
That is the prettiest card in the deck. Okay. All right, we make our hand. And big blind?
Big blind leads for $175.
Blind 175. Okay, so into a pot of 700, he bets 175. And you said he only started with 700, or he had 700 on the turn?
I think he's 700. I think after he bets 175, he has like $300 behind.
Okay. Alex is, I'm sure, folding the button. I say we just make it like... enough to put that guy all in and at least try to get the big blind and, you know, hopefully someone rivered a set or something and they come along too. But
if we were trying to squeeze an extra 175 by just flatting out of the other two, I think that's kind of poor because I think this guy is just like calling off with any pair here.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I'm just going to be like, so I make it, I make it 500 to put him in, and he calls with 3-6.
Oh God! Okay. All right. You know, when I was looking at this, I'm like, oh, I guess three, because when the river hit, I was like, okay, we got the nuts. Oh wait, no, 3-6 is the nuts. Well, we can remove that from everyone's range. So I just discounted it.
Right. Well, if I'm calling, just the fact that he called, you know, out of position for 40, pretty bad.
Oh, God, that's bad.
I don't know if this is that interesting a hand. I don't know.
I think this is a bad beat story more than anything else.
No, I just thought it was an amusing hand. I did think it was an interesting spot on the flop, though.
Yeah.
I like my thinking there that I was going to see an extra card.
Frequently
in a multi-way pot because the original raiser is smart and is not necessarily going to want to be able to get all his chips, you know, four-way with in a four-way pot.
Yeah.
So I thought I kind of liked how I played the hand. I thought that was a good way to play it. I don't know if ever check raising the turn would be kind of sexy if Alex bets, because he doesn't have Jack 10, but it's against me, and he'd also think I was full of shit a lot. So
I might not do it against Alex. I try to not play with the guys that are better than me, and try to play with the fun players. Right. You know, don't get tricky with the good ones. Just stick to.
Did I unintentionally give a bad beat story, Steve? I don't know. That's pretty lame, huh?
That was pretty. It only took us 173 episodes to get there, but I think you did.
Okay.
Yeah. Well done, sir. You're getting quite good at this.
Yeah, just sliding them in there, just casually. Oh yes.
Oh, by the way, I have a hand to talk over. that was good. Right on. Well, let's see. Should we wrap it up? We've got.
Let's put a bow on this bitch, Steve.
All right, let's do it. All righty, Mikey. Well, thank you for coming on. And you guys can follow Mike on Twitter. Throw out some love for him against Ignition at Mike Schneiderman. There we go. And I think we're $350 away from me playing the 1K double stack. So if you guys are interested in that, headsuppokerpodcast@gmail.com or hit me up on Twitter @HUPpodcast. Thank you for tuning in. And here is your weekly motivational speech.
Say thank you for grace. Thank you for mercy. Thank you for understanding. Thank you for wisdom. Thank you for parents. Thank you for love. Thank you for kindness. Thank you for humility. Thank you for peace. Thank you for prosperity. Say thank you in advance for what's already yours.
Because I can tell you right now, today, in this moment, I promise you, the Matrix has you. It's keeping us from becoming who we want to become. And that thing is our mindset. It's our belief system. It is so ever-present. It is so ingrained into the fabric of who you are and the way that you process data, you don't even notice it. You don't even know that it's real. And this is the thing that impacts your life. It is your inability to see that your mindset controls everything. Your opportunity is right now. And that's why you need to start with why. How you truly make a difference.
Sometimes you're the problem. It sounds easy, it's not. You will grow up.
So when you have time, an hour or two, go by the ocean, sit in the forest, put your phones down, your computers down. Write down your top 5 goals and dreams. What do you want written on your tombstone that you want to be remembered for? However crazy they are, write them down. And right there is the right now that you have to build on. And then put a dash that says next step. Because the biggest problem most people have is that next step. We can all write down our passions. But we always struggle with the next step. And right next to them, put down the resources that you already have right now that you can use. Second thing to do, print what you wrote and post it. Post it in 3 places. Where you go to bed, where you brush your teeth, and the door you go in and out of the most in your house. And the reason why is because your house is your sanctuary. It's the place that you trust. And it takes more than 20 interactions to create a habit, any type of habit. So if you look at those posts 20 days in a row, you will start to believe. What you believe becomes your reality. How is that helpful? There are people in this world who viscerally believe so much in something that they literally go through pain for hours because they have a story to tell. Then belief itself is a construct. And if belief is a construct, then like any other construct, it can be manipulated and changed. And at any moment, this is so important. At any moment, you can choose to believe something new about yourself. Now, the weird thing about belief is as soon as you change that belief, it becomes true. Why that is, I will never quite understand. What weird quirk of human evolution has left us in a space where simply believing it makes it true? If you think you're dumb, guess what? You're dumb.